fellow Freedom fans. You're listening to Preservative Talk Radio, brought to you by Freedom Ministries, where we confront the issues of the day on a constitutional basis, a biblical basis, and the basis of right versus wrong. Find out more at PreservativeTalkRadio.com. Now let's go to our pre-recorded broadcast. Yesterday I was talking about something. It was, what was that? Oh, here it is. I was going to go visit the absolute rights of individuals. It was one of those things where I said 2 days ago, I mentioned at the end of the show that I would visit one of those rights that are reserved. The Constitution of the United States in 1789, there was ratified some amendments to it. It was the Bill of Rights. And the Ninth Amendment, basically, it talked about the fact that if there wasn't something listed in those rights, it didn't mean that they weren't protected. It was just a spot that they would reiterate what rights are right. So I said, well, what are those rights that are reserved? What are they? Did a little homework, started reading Sir William Blackstone because he has a document that is called Commentaries on the Laws of England. It was published in 1766. It's what the founders of the nation were reading. One of the things that he wrote was the first book. The first book that he wrote of the four books, actually it was five. There was an introduction. There was a book the first, book the second, book the third, book the fourth. Book the first, chapter the first, was titled Of the Absolute Rights of Individuals. There are things called absolute rights. So that's where I was going to go. Getting there, I don't know what I did. I guess I was looking, I don't know what I was looking up. But in the introduction where he's explaining to this, the folks that asked him to, it's kind of like a group that ultimately they review law and they explain it and they teach it. So it's actually a court of appeals in some sort of way, similar in some respects to our own Supreme Court, where they try to declare what the law is. So they chartered Sir William Blackstone to come up with his commentaries on the laws of England. They thought it was something that needed to be done, and he was pretty good at it. And as he was explaining things, and this, again, this was published in 1766, and those crazy freedom-loving Americans who believe that God was sovereign and he operated through government as a minister of God for our good. They were just passionate about good government. They were reading his stuff. I mean, they didn't have television, so they were reading the commentaries of Sir William Blackstone. And as he was talking about certain things, like for instance, some have divided the common law into two principal grounds or foundations, established customs such as that where there are three brothers, the eldest brother shall be heir to the second in exclusion of the youngest. And here's these just examples. Establish rules and maxims as. Now, these maxims, the reason I'm mentioning these maxims, because they're kind of those absolute retained rights. Many of them are known as maxims, just no-brainer rules of law that everybody understood to be true and right. Establish rules and maxims as the king can do no wrong. Now, can the king do no wrong? That no man shall be bound to accuse himself. That was a maxim. Well, that be bound to accuse himself issue came up in the Bill of Rights, didn't it? And even this issue of whether or not the king can do no wrong, that was still carried on into America, that the king can do no wrong. You say you can't fight City Hall? Well, actually, City Hall has to give you permission. Caesar, figurative Caesar, has to give you permission to sue him. Here's some other things. It's an established rule to abide by former precedents where the same points come again in litigation. When you hear, well, it's set a precedent or those kind of things. You know, that's the kind of thing we talk about. But here it was stated back there in 1766. It's an established rule to abide by former precedents where the same points come again in litigation. Now, that is a little bit, that has been polluted somewhat in America. But in his commentaries, he goes into detail. explains how we ought to be looking at law and how justices, those who are trying to apply the law to each situation, are supposed to go about their business. It goes into detail here. It's a really wonderful treatise on law. He says it's an established rule to abide by the former precedents. That's called stare decisis, where there's an established rule. It's been applied on certain facts. So if all those facts match in the future, you ought to have the same ruling. Unless something was really twisted in the previous ruling, you ought to let that thing continue on just so that make sure that there's equal justice under the law. So those are precepts. These are maxims, the things, rules that we rest on. Those are rights that are retained. And this, is that a right of yours that would happen? Yes, it's a right. It's a right thing. The word rights means it is a right thing rather than a wrong. You don't have the right to do a wrong, which is very popular happening right in our society right now, wrestling over if men have a right to do wrong. So he went on to say, as well, to keep the scale of justice even and steady and not liable to waver with every new judge's opinion. And that's what we've got polluting the laws of our land to this day. As also because law in that case being solemnly declared and determined, what before was uncertain and perhaps indifferent has now become a permanent rule, which is not in the breast of any subsequent judge to alter or vary from according to his private sentiments. Roe versus Wade was a private sentiment. It was base. It was insane. It was twisted. Lawrence versus Texas was insane. It was just an abandoning of stare decisis and also procedure. And so when we evade procedure, then we have injustice. So those are the kind of things that we have to, that's very brainiac kind of stuff, but it's very important. Let's go on to see, before I get to the point I want to make here, I'm quoting some things from 1766, Sir William Blackstone's commentaries that the founders of this nation were reading. He being sworn to determine that would be a judge, not according to his own private judgment, but according to the known laws and customs of the land, not delegated to pronounce a new law. That is what has been recently happening, yes, in the U.S. Supreme Court. Not delegated to pronounce a new law, but to maintain and expound the old one. Yet this rule admits of exception. This is a very important thing, America. This rule admits an exception where the former determination is most evidently contrary to reason. Well, that makes sense. Now, the problem is when the reason at that point actually had a reference. If a law was actually in violation of the liberty that God has instituted, the freedom, the right things that God has instituted and blessed, then it would be contrary to reason. It doesn't make sense. It's actually contrary to the purpose of government. Because let's see what he said. If this old law or whatever is determination most evidently contrary to reason, much more if it be contrary to the divine law. See, higher than your sense of ability to figure something out is the Bible. And this wasn't a theocracy. This was the secular government, guys. The secular government was separate from the church. The civil law, he goes and explains in here, and the civil law, the civil government, and the civil courts were separate from the ecclesiastical. They had separate jurisdictions. There was in some respects, some separation of church and state, wherein the secular government and civil law was literally secular. Nevertheless, it was subject to religion. The church was subject to religion. In America, the church and the state, yes, it is separation of church and state. It's always has been, is always intended to be, though Mr. Jefferson never used those terms. Yes, it is, folks. Don't deceive yourself. There is a separation of church and state. I mean, admittedly, it's caused us some trouble in some respects. We don't have the power of the sword imposing religion on anybody, which is really good. But now we've got pagans taking control of the government, which is just completely disintegrating it. Because pagans are wicked. Evil men do not understand justice. Okay, if you disagree, 888, the phone lines are open, 888-248-2046. 2046. Much more if the former determination is contrary to the divine law, then, of course, it can be the decision overturned. But even in such cases, the subsequent judges do not pretend to make a new law, but to vindicate the old one from misrepresentation. In other words, you should really only be cleaning it up. So that's what I was reading. That's the kind of crazy stuff I was reading, ultimately trying to go find what were those rights that are protected by the Ninth Amendment. Those things that are not enumerated, where do you find them? A great place to find them was and is the commentaries of the Law of England, because that's what the people of the day understood. Okay. And here I'm just going to finish up, since I brought up this stare decisis precedent-setting doctrine here. The doctrine of law then is that precedents and rules must be followed unless flatly absurd or unjust. For though the reason not be obvious at first view, hello Roe versus Wade, yet we owe such a deference to former times as not to suppose they acted wholly without consideration. The Roe versus Wade court said, Texas, we don't see in your statute what your purpose of having a penalty against killing a baby in the uterus was. We don't see it written in your statute. Hello, it was a no-brainer. And hey, and the rule of law is, even though the reason not be obvious at first view to you, because I don't know, you must be clueless, yet we owe such a deference to former times as not to suppose they acted wholly without consideration. You're supposed to presume that they had good reason. Okay? And now what happens is, the person in Roe versus Wade came up and said, court, we think that's unreasonable. And then the person operating arguing on behalf of Texas said, well, it's to protect the life of the baby. And the court said, well, I don't see that here in the statute. Okay. He just explained, he confessed with his mouth representing Texas what the reasoning was. You don't have to have it in the statute. They, making it up, shooting from the hip, those who were trying to say that it was unreasonable, were speaking out of their own silly little minds themselves. So, I'm a little bit upset at Roe versus Wade. I'm upset at America for rolling over. And I'm going off on a rabbit trail. The number here is 888-248-2046. So this was, again, I was talking about the commentaries of Sir William Blackstone. He goes on, he talks about statutes, whether they're declaratory of the common law or remedial of some defect. And that's important for something I've got going here in the near future, talking about statutes and laws. And then he goes on and says that acts of Parliament. He began to discuss acts of Parliament and what power they had. Now, that was in Section 3 of his introduction, but when he went on to Section 4, it got really interesting, and I brought this up today, and it's going to take me back to the Declaration of Independence. So this is kind of educational, I hope. I hope you're connecting these dots, and even if you just get about 15 seconds worth of statements that you can connect together to be a blessing to you. That's all that matters. Something that adds to your life today. This is Preservative Talk Radio. We're going to preserve society one brain cell at a time.